This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Cowardine, the author of Lincoln, A Life of Purpose and Power. I look very much forward to speaking to the professor someday about, but the new book is even more captivating. This is a story of the battle within the battle of the Civil War. It is entitled Righteous Strife, How Warring Religious Nationalists Forged Lincoln's Union. I tell the professor that many years ago, reading about the Civil War, I puzzled across Horace Greeley's remark right after the passing of the Kansas-Nebraska Act, 1854, the driver for the birth of the Republican Party. And Greeley wrote to the effect that the pulpits will not be silent at this calumny. And I puzzled, what is he talking about? What pulpits? Well, here they are in Richard's book. Richard, congratulations. Very, very good evening to you. Thank you very much for this enormous amount of work. And we begin January 4th, 1861, the period between the election of 1860, Abraham Lincoln coming through in a contested election with four different directions, and the leaving of office of James Buchanan, the President of the United States. James Buchanan names a fast day in the middle of December, and it's January 4th, 1861. By this time, South Carolina has left the Union, and other states that will quickly be known as the Confederacy are contemplating leaving. What was a fast day? Why did Buchanan call it? What did it hope to achieve? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your program. What is a fast day? Well, it was quite a contentious occasion insofar as fast days had been very common in the colonial period. They were concentrated in New England. That's where the Puritan fast days at colonial level were very common. And they were called to recognize the sins of the community, to repair the offenses of the community, and to pray for the blessing of God. There were fast days during the American Revolution for obvious reasons. And subsequently, George Washington called a fast day, and James Madison called a fast day during the War of 1812. But I say they were contentious occasions because there were those who said it is not the business of the federal government, the national government, to call a fast day. Individual states can do as they wish. And indeed, there were many fast days in the early Republic and the antebellum period in the New England states. But many argued that it was not the place of a national government, given the constitutional separation of church and state. It was not the place of an executive, a chief executive, to call a fast day. And indeed, in 1832, when the country was struggling with a cholera epidemic, there was a call for a fast day from the government, and Andrew Jackson said, no, there will be no fast day. This is, we can pray to God, but it is not for the government to direct the people as to how they pray. There were further fast days before the Civil War. The death of William Henry Harrison had been an occasion when the country thought, how has our nation sinned that we should lose a president only a month after taking office? But in January of 1861, as you point out, James Buchanan's fast day occurred on the 4th of January. It was James Buchanan, it has to be said, was an old school Presbyterian. Rather like Lincoln himself and others that we'll be talking about, no doubt. He was a Calvinist, and he believed in the merits of prostrating oneself before the Almighty at a time of crisis. We have to remember that for Calvinists of this kind, the nation was the equivalent of a sinning individual. The nation had a responsibility before God to behave with a clear conscience, had duties and responsibilities. Whereas individuals would be punished in the afterlife, nations would be punished in this life. And so Buchanan, faced with the crisis of the nation, thought the best thing to do, or one of the things that he could do, would be to call a fast day and try to unite the nation in prayer. Well, it didn't succeed, as you'll be well aware. It certainly didn't forestall war. And it led to a range of responses. There were indeed old school Presbyterian conservatives who thought that this was absolutely proper. They were staunch supporters of the Union. They were, of course, highly critical of South Carolina, but thought that a day of fasting and prayer would prevent the separation of further states from the Union. However, there were those who said, looking at Buchanan, who had been so feeble in the face of events, this is precisely the work of a man who doesn't know what to do. This is the work. This is the proposal of someone who is out of his depth. And indeed, there were those who decided to completely ignore the fast day because they thought it was a waste of time. Paint the picture for your listeners. The fast day demonstrated the variety of opinion within the North and the border states, and to some extent within the South, although it has to be said that very few Southern churches responded to Buchanan's call. We can see three different categories of religious nationalist in the response to this fast day. There were those conservatives I've just mentioned, staunch unionists. An example would be Charles Hodge of Princeton, the conservative theologian whose teaching at Princeton had instructed many ministers, old school Presbyterian ministers, who had filled the pulpits of the South and the Middle States and much of the North before the Civil War. Hodge responded positively to, and his old school Presbyterian, like-minded Princetonians responded positively to this call for a day to demonstrate to the Lord that the American Union was a union under God to be saved. It had a mission. It had a responsibility in human history as the first true republic, a republic, a vulnerable republic, but nonetheless a republic that had stood so far the test of time. It had a responsibility, the nation had a responsibility to kneel in prayer and in fasting before the Almighty. There were a second category of anti-slavery Republicans and nationalists who responded to the fast day as a means of demonstrating their purity in the face of an institution, slavery, which was an indictment, the Lord's indictment of the nation. Their view of slavery was drawn from the sort of prophetic voices of the Old Testament. In Isaiah chapter 58, Isaiah says, about a fast day, "Is this the day that I have chosen, a day when the oppressed shall go free, when we shall liberate those in bonds?" And for the anti-slavery nationalists, the fast day was an opportunity to demonstrate to the Almighty that the nation was preparing to take the turn towards the elimination of slavery. On the other hand, there were those pro-slavery nationalists who saw in the Bible an absolute scriptural defense of slavery. After all, the patriarchs of the Old Testament held slaves, and Christ in the New Testament made no comments on slavery itself. The Roman Empire was a slaveholding empire. Christ did not criticize slavery, and of course, his disciples and subsequently the apostles were, in the case of Paul, advising escaped slaves to return to their masters. So these pro-slavery theologians, a number of them, of course, in the border states, most of them in the South, used the fast day as a means of setting out the very clear responsibility of the nation to uphold its scriptural purposes and to uphold slavery, which, on the argument of the pro-slavery theologians, was not an unscriptural institution, but one which gave to the slave opportunities which, being uneducated, being, as they would have inferred, of a lesser order of intelligence, slaves were benefited by the institution. So that's the fast day, with the three categories of anti-slavery nationalist, conservative nationalist, and pro-slavery nationalist.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Carradine. His new book is Righteous Strife. This is the battle of the pulpits that, as the professor just outlined, was fought before the war's opening shots. When we come back, it failed. Why did it fail? And what about Buchanan? Lincoln is waiting to be president. He's president-elect. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.